Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.
You're listening to NPR News. I'm Angela Davis. Good to have you join us today. We are living through some turbulent times right now. There's the pandemic, George Floyd's murder, and the racial reckoning that followed, plus natural disasters around the world. During this time, many of us have turned to others for help. And helpers come in many shapes and sizes, as does hope. One kind of helper that has gotten a lot of attention recently is the philanthropic helper. What is philanthropy, and how is it different than charity, and what can it do for us during these difficult times? That is what we're talking about this hour. Tanya Allen took over as president of the McKnight Foundation in March. She's still new to Minnesota, but she is not new to the role of philanthropic leader. Tanya is with me today. Hi, Tanya. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Angela. It's so good to be with you.
Yes. Thank you for giving us some time today. And we want to hear from our listeners, too. Do you see areas where philanthropy could improve life here in Minnesota? Or do you have questions about how foundations work in general or the McKnight Foundation specifically? The phone lines are open. And here's the phone number. It's 651-227-6000. Again, you can call us this hour at 651-227-6000. You can also tweet me at Angela Davis, NPR. And I want to make sure we mention to our listeners that NPR News is among the Minnesota organizations that has received grant money from McKnight. So, Tanya, the first thing I want to know is why the McKnight Foundation? Why did you want this job and at this time?
Well, I don't think there's a better time to be in Minnesota. Quite honestly, I feel like it's an opportunity to meet the moment. The McKnight Foundation is working on two of the most urgent challenges of our generation. That's climate change and racial inequity. And so those are two things that are dear to my heart. And to be able to do that in a place where the racial reckoning movement was reignited because of George Floyd's death felt like a perfect opportunity for me to kind of marry my passions, my leadership, and to also be in partnership with just extraordinary leaders who are in the state and who see a brighter future for the state and for the Midwest, and that I thought I could add my talents to the pool. So that's why I'm here. I'm just really anxious to be here, to be in partnership, and to create change together.
You call them urgent challenges, huge challenges, climate change and racial inequity. In your mind, how do those two go together?
Well, excuse me. They go together, obviously, because equity is about how we treat our people and how we make sure that people have access to opportunity. Sustainability, this whole notion of trying to create a to take care of our earth, to take care of our climate, is also about how we treat our people. So a lot of times we only talk about the technical aspects of climate, like, you know, whether or not we, you know, we're affecting the ozone layer. But in actuality, what climate change does is it changes our weather patterns. It changes our climate. And so that means that we as humans don't have reliability in things like how we grow food, whether or not we can depend on whether our area is going to be flooded or not, if it's going to be a cold freeze or a cold front. So it just really throws chaos in our entire system. And whenever chaos happens in our system, you can believe that those who are most disadvantaged, those who have been systemically disadvantage are going to be the ones who will suffer the most. And so when you look at these two issues side by side, you see that, like, when we talk about equity, when we talk about rebuilding our communities in Minneapolis and St. Paul after the racial reckoning and the protest and how the buildings were burned down, well, we need to do that in an equitable way, in a sustainable way that will actually allow us to build buildings that preserve energy, that doesn't emit carbon, all of those things. And at the same time, we got to build policies that doesn't force and create kind of environmental injustices that affect people of color or people who are impoverished. So those are the kinds of things. You see those intersections in lots of ways. And what's really exciting about this is that the McKnight Foundation adopted these two priorities in 2019, and now you see the world really naming these priorities as our most urgent challenges. So we have this real sweet spot to create and contribute to change along with so many other of our partners.
Tanya, when the announcement came that you'd been hired to be the next leader of the McKnight Foundation, there were lots of articles and profiles written about you. And I know that you have described yourself as a place-based person. Can you expand on that for me? What does that mean when you call yourself a place-based person?
It means that I believe in being embedded. And that means that you have to know a place. So I think any strategy, any good work you do is going to be advantaged by knowing the context really well. So knowing the people, knowing the relationship, knowing the history, knowing the politics of what's going on. And so for me, as an person who finds themselves doing their best work, when I'm embedded in a community and I understand the people and I can understand, like, what changes need to happen because people are telling me what the changes ought to be, and that I can contribute because I understand that complexity, that's what being a place-based person means to me. It means, like, really, embeddedness means to me not just, like, knowing the place. It also means loving the place. And so even though I'm new to Minnesota, I find, like, I have to love this place to be able to work here, and I am finding that I'm growing in love every day.
So how are you getting to know the state, and, you know, what have you been doing to try to visit different parts of Minnesota?
Yeah, so I have been meeting people all through the region, mostly in the Twin Cities region. And I've been talking, so I've been, you know, obviously I've been going through a tour of meeting leaders all throughout the community. I've had lots of lunches. I go to a lot of community events, and you know how sometimes they have little
like meet and greets?
Stations where you know, people are talking about their work, they're advocating for change. Mm-hmm. They don't know me, I don't know them. I just sit there and I talk to them, and I'm learning about what it is that's important to them. And then I am asking people, who are you most inspired by? And when they tell me who they're inspired by, I write their names down, and sometimes I call them up randomly and say, hey, I know you don't know me, but I just have heard such wonderful things. I want to understand what's important to you. And I've talked to lots of people across the state as well. So a lot of the McKnight Foundation has funded the Minnesota Initiative Foundations, which are stationed across greater Minnesota. I've talked to all of those leaders. I've read their reports. So I'm just immersing myself in community, immersing myself in our state, and understanding what are the things that are great about us and what are the things that we desire to be different.
And you know, I want to get more into, and we will get more into what McKnight funds, but first I want to back up a little bit and ask you, you know, what do you think about the role of philanthropy and how we can help? Like, what is your philosophy about the work that you should be doing?
Well, I think that's a great question. So I believe that philanthropy's role is to be a helper and a contributor to the greater good. And that means that we can sometimes fund things that are not ideal for government to fund because they might be experimental, they might be innovations that actually we want others to pay attention to. And I also believe that it's really important that I believe in this concept of fixers and builders. And so I think that there are some people, when they see a problem, they want to fix the problem. There are some people who see a problem and they choose to actually build a different society or a different set of solutions that haven't necessarily come across the radar. And I think that philanthropy plays a really important role in trying to figure out, like, how do we invest and strategically balance the way that we support fixers and the way that we support builders, because we need both of them in our society. And unfortunately, sometimes you have fixers and builders who are fighting each other and saying that each of them are wrong. But in actuality, they're both right. Like, we need to tend to the urgent problems in our society today while we're building a future state. And I think that philanthropy has a sweet spot of being able to not only support both of those things, but to bridge. So how do we support our communities? How do we support our state? How do we support our country and our globe as we try and move from our current state and the immediate needs of that and move into a future state where we can see many of these problems resolved because we have built something new and durable?
I'm talking to the president of the McKnight Foundation, Tanya Allen, and I want to hear from you, too. Do you see areas where philanthropy could improve life here in Minnesota, or do you have questions about how foundations work in general, or specifically the McKnight Foundation? Give us a call at 651-227-6000. You can tweet me at Angela Davis, NPR. Tanya, we already have some listeners on the line who want to ask you some questions, so let's take a phone call. This is Chris, who's calling in, and Chris, what did you want to ask or share?
Good morning. Tanya, thank you for taking over the position that you did, and welcome to Minnesota. One of my questions is, we are a small mental health nonprofit that started in 2017. And as any new startup nonprofit, you find that you, I did not have the understanding of how hard it would be to come by funds to not only operate but grow the programs that we envisioned as being most impactful in our community. Many of those are educational opportunities. When we talk about mental health, teaching people how to recognize the signs and symptoms that somebody is in crisis, and being comfortable asking the hard questions like about suicide. But putting that together, you know, we started with many of the small ways of raising funds, going after small grant opportunities, because we did not have the reputation yet built up of who we are. We had done contract training work with large organizations like NAMI, who do incredible things in the state and across the country. We partner with them on advocacy work. But the funds that I think when somebody looks at a small organization like the Heart and Mind Connection and NAMI, they go, never heard of you. Going to give our money over here.
Chris, what's your question for Tanya? What is your question?
Well, my question is that there is a difference between charity, obviously, and philanthropy. How do we tap into the larger picture of a sustainable philanthropy funds through organizations such as yours to be impactful ongoing? You can only do
if you
so
don't have
Facebook
the name
birthday.
Recognition. Yeah, if you don't have the name recognition, Tanya, how would you address what he's asking about?
Well, thank you, Chris, for the warm welcome, and I also want to just thank you for the good work that you're doing. And we all know right now that mental health is so critical in this particular time, as we all are living through trauma and change. So your work is so important. And I do understand the concern that you're articulating, which is, like, small organizations, it's very difficult for them to get resources. Mm-hmm. And what I would say is that we believe that we need to have a robust ecosystem of organizations that are doing good work. And because the size of the foundation, it's almost impossible for us to work independently with all of the small organizations inside of the state. However, we know that it's still a need that needs to be met. And therefore, we work with lots of what I would call intermediary organizations. And these are organizations that are kind of like a step between us and a step between the smaller nonprofits. And we give them resources and so that they can, one, assist organizations like the one that Chris is running to help them build their capacity so that they actually can access larger philanthropy, and two, they help them find grant dollars to be able to support their work. So I'm happy to provide information to you, Angela. Maybe you can put it on your website or something like that.
Sure.
For many of the smaller nonprofits so that they can access the resource they need, that both technical assistance and, quite honestly, the capital that they need to run their programs every single day. But they are so important. And we, you know, so we cannot ignore them and not service these small and but mighty organizations.
Let's take another phone call as we talk to the president of the McKnight Foundation, Tanya Allen, in Minneapolis. Paula is on the phone. And good morning, Paula. What do you want to share or ask?
Hi, thanks so much for taking my call. I wanted to say that I appreciate everything that's being said so far and how important it is that we have these fixers and builders and a multitude of different groups and organizations that are funding the small but mighty, like you just said, that are responding to the needs in the specific places and the specific times where we are. I think that you're exactly right, too, that Minnesota is a place to be. It's a place of leadership. And I just wanted to say for my part in our world here in the Twin Cities and in Minnesota, YWCA Minneapolis has been working to train early childhood education teachers, specifically focusing on people of color, people that earn low incomes, immigrants, and people for whom English is not their first language or it's their dual language. And I just so wholeheartedly believe in the work of the McKnight Foundation and all of our small but mighties. And I really want us all to dig in and pay attention to our youngest children and the people who are predominantly women of color who serve them. And that's our way to our economic and our environmental equity that we need so badly. And,
thank you. That's Paula calling from Minneapolis. And Tanya, on the McKnight Foundation website, I read this description about the foundation. It says McKnight annually grants about $100 million in support of climate solutions in the Midwest, an equitable and inclusive Minnesota, the arts, neuroscience, and international crop research, wide range of areas there. So I think a lot of people would like to know, like, who do you all turn to when you're making funding decisions?
Well, it is a wide range of areas, but what I would say is that as we think about our work, we have, those are the headlines, which you just articulated. We think about our work as what are also the through lines. And for us, even as we're trying to deal with global hunger, and we're trying to create scientific or support scientific invention so that we understand brains and understand science and biology. Or if we're supporting our artists, we see these themes of climate or sustainability and equity as through lines. So we got to focus on our headlines, but we also have to make sure that these two important issues show up in everything we do. So it is just fundamentally a part of our value system, regardless of the topic or the area that we're focusing on. And the question that you raised about, like, who do we go to? We're trying to find change agents. We're trying to find people who are looking for good trouble, the people who are so passionate about these issues that they dedicate their lives to actually trying to drive change around climate and drive change around equity or create science innovations or solve hunger by working with people in their native lands. These are the kinds of things that we look to. We look to artists. As you know, the McKnight Foundation has a really rich and long arts program, and we recently changed the name of that program to Arts and Culture because we really wanted to make sure that we had culture bearers in that work. And the reason why is because artists and culture bearers are the people who tell the stories. They ring the bell. They tell us what's happening in our communities far before we actually get data can tell us what's going on. They are also the people who are looking for solutions and looking with kind of bringing innovation and ingenuity to try and solve and to think through things and to give voice and literally imagery to problems that and some solutions that we haven't yet really fully wrestled with. So these are the kinds of people we're looking for, diverse leaders in every field who are thinking about how to solve these problems. And we're also looking for, Angela, people who want to work collaboratively. So we have lots of organizations in Minnesota, in the Midwest, and across the globe that are working on a suite of issues. But the challenge is that none of us can claim attribution to solving a problem. We all have to have a contribution model. So how are we working together? How are we aligning? How are we making sure that we're focusing on the things that we're doing really good well? And how are we making sure that the things we aren't doing well, that we're partnering with others so that we expand our reach and create more boldness in the way that we approach problems? That's the kind of organizations that we look for and the kind of organizations that we want to be in partnership with. And the only way that we can do that, quite honestly, is that we have to be proximate in community. We have to be proximate in the issues that we're dealing with so that we know who those people are and understand what their contributions, what their commitment, and what their vision is for the future.
I appreciate your appreciation for the arts, because I agree with you that art can certainly ignite change as well and can capture our attention and make us think about things in a way that produces change. I want to take another phone call, this time in Hudson, Wisconsin. Susanna is on the line. Hey there, Susanna. What did you want to share or ask?
I appreciate your appreciation for the arts.
Susanna, are you there? Okay, let's go to another call while we try to connect again with her. In Halleck, we've got Daniel on the line. Good morning to you, Daniel.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for taking my call, and welcome to Minnesota, Tanya. It's a great state. Glad you're here.
Thank you.
From the far northwest. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, we can hear you. Go ahead, Daniel.
Okay, yeah, I'm calling from the far northwest. I serve in Halleck, Minnesota as a Lutheran pastor. We're a town of about 1,000 people, but we've got more jobs than people up here. And we'd really like to find ways to bring more people up here. I mean, I know there's some things like being cold and being rural, but boy, if a family could settle up here, I think they'd really do very well. So what can McKnight, or how could we propose a grant that would, you know, bring some funding and build a place where people would want to move to? Thank you.
And Daniel, yeah, there in the far northwest corner of the state in Halleck, Minnesota. And what do you, you know, as you think about greater Minnesota and the rural communities across Minnesota, how do they connect with McKnight and its mission?
So our Vibrant and Equitable Communities program area, which is new, and we've been building that program area, it actually covers the entire state. So I was really grateful to hear Daniel's comment and his passion. That's exactly the kinds of things that we want to work on with communities in every corner of the state, is we want to help them think through, like, how we can invest in those places so that they can be more vibrant, more welcoming, and so that they're growing. And if they have industry where people can thrive, then we should be helping our state and helping the people in our state connect the dots so that people can thrive. And so I'm very interested in talking to Daniel further to understand and to see how we might be able to support him by maybe putting him in connection to one of our initiative foundations, or even one of our program officers, to see how we make that work. And one of the things I would just say, and we all know this, like, this is about how do we make every corner of the state and a place where people thrive. And that's our ambition. Just like everybody, no matter where you live, you want your place to thrive. And so we want to be able to bring the resources to those places where people are willing to bring relationship and who are willing to rewrite the rules. A lot of times think that we need a tremendous amount of power to change things. You do need power, but the power is simply, I like to define it as rewriting the rules. So rewrite the rules wherever you are, and we want to help people step into their power to change the rules and the practices so that we create places where everyone can thrive.
Before we go to news, I want to take another phone call from a listener as we talk to Tanya Allen, the president of the McKnight Foundation. The number is 651-227-6000 if you want to ask her a question or share a thought with her. And right now in Minneapolis, Joan is on the phone. Good morning, Joan.
Hello.
Hi.
Good morning.
One of the things that I'm seeing throughout this discussion of diversity and equity in the last year and a half, 2 years, with the George Floyd issues, and et cetera, is that people with disabilities are not being included in that conversation. We represent over 25% of the population. It's the one minority group anyone can become a part of at any point in one's life. And yet I don't hear people with disabilities being as a part of that whole conversation. Equity is about including everyone, because people with disabilities are coming from a variety of different racial groups. So I certainly would like to see more philanthropy focused on just including people with disabilities in that discussion of equity and diversity.
Thank you, Joan, for calling in. And Tanya, what do you have to say to Joan about that?
Oh, I want to just tell Joan I really appreciate her question and her comment, because she's absolutely right. We have to be more inclusive of people who have different physical or mental abilities. And that is a part of the way that we think about diversity, inclusion, and equity. And I would say that we have learned a really important lesson from the disabilities community. Just think about curb cuts. Right? Like when we walk up and down sidewalks, there is a curb cut that actually allows us to kind of like ramp up. It's like a little slope that goes to the street. That really was a movement that came out of those from people who had different abilities and were in wheelchairs. And they were saying, we need to have access to sidewalks. We need to be able to move and have access to mobility with ease. And because they advocated for that resource, all of us get to benefit from it. Like, so if you're a parent with a young child, you get to roll the stroller. If you're a delivery man, you get to bring your boxes up onto the sidewalk with ease. Or if you're a runner, you don't have to trip over curbs as we're going through. So I think what she is pointing out is that we know how to create equity. We know how to create inclusion, and the disability movement showed us how to do it with that one example. But now we have to stretch that example to be more inclusive of people of different ethnicities, different races, different lived experiences, different economics, different abilities, and also different preferences or relationships or how they identify their gender. So we have to create a space where everybody can thrive and everybody feels comfortable, and everybody is equipped to give all of their talents to make this place better.
Let's go back to the phone lines in Brainerd, Minnesota. We've got Julie on the phone. Hi, Julie.
Good morning. I've been passionate my whole life about reproductive health, and in the last 10 years have been involved in the Brainerd area trying to set up a sexual health clinic. And 4 years ago, four of us women opened a sexual health clinic here. The need is tremendous. We have been actually very successful in our fundraising, but when we approach the larger philanthropic groups like McKnight, and I don't know that we specifically have done that, but that the larger groups don't tend to support reproductive health. They say they personally do, but that philosophically it's just too much of a hot button issue.
So Julie, what's your question? And can you lean into your microphone?
Yes, I just want to know if it's possible to tap into the McKnight Foundation and if they do support reproductive health issues.
Okay.
And we're the only clinic that's opened within decades here in greater Minnesota, and the work is tremendous, and we deal a lot with gender equity and mental health issues also. So
Thank you. That's Julie calling in from Brainerd. And Tanya, she's asking about reproductive health issues. And what can you tell us about McKnight and funding that type of work? And are there some areas that you think philanthropy cannot address?
Well, I think that philanthropy can contribute. So first, let me just say thank you to Julie and all her good work in Brainerd and that of her sister women who are working on behalf of the greater good. So I just want to I just always appreciate people who do good things. What I would say is I think there's a role for philanthropy in all of these issues, but each individual philanthropy can't do all things. And so this is not a particular area or interest, area of interest for the foundation. We're not making investments in that particular topic. But what I would do is encourage Julie to reach out to women's foundations. And there are funders that are working nationally on these issues, particularly around health equity and gender health equity. And so she should look not just in our backyard of Minnesota, but look across the country, because there are many who want to strengthen these clinics and build clinics and build capacity. So sometimes it's really, where do you look? It's not just whether or not this foundation does it or not, but let's find the foundations that do it, and how do we create relationships for Julie and the work that she's doing. And I would just encourage her to look up the Women's Foundation, Minnesota's Women's Foundation, because I think they might be a good place for her to start. And then I also would encourage her to look at the number of foundations across the country that are thinking about women's issues, even though reproductive health is not just women's issues, it's also men's too. So thank you.
Let's take another phone call in Minneapolis. Sarah is on the line. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. I work in development in the Twin Cities, and I'm on the receiving and grant writing side of things, but I'm an avid reader of Vu Wei, who has a weekly blog. I'm sure Tanya is familiar, and I'm just really curious about, we have roughly $24 billion in assets in Minnesota, and about $2 billion is given out every year, and I'm really curious to hear what conversations are happening in the foundation world around what would happen if, more than that minimum 5% was given, and that inherent risk of a foundation sort of closing its doors, of giving all it has, and what that looks like, or sort of what conversations might be happening around that. Obviously I'm on the other side, so I don't know the answers, but I'm just really curious to hear.
Yeah, Sarah, let's see what Tanya has to say.
Great question, Sarah. So just for the listeners, foundations are required by the IRS to distribute 5% of its assets annually. And the way that we operate is that we hope to earn more than 5% in the markets, which actually allows us to replenish what we give away so that we can keep these institutions around for a longer amount of time, so that we can serve the community for a longer amount of time. And the question that Sarah is asking is, could you make greater impact by making just distribute 100% of it? Or if foundations did more at this particular time, could we create more change? And I am a big believer that money doesn't solve problems. It helps enable solutions, but it doesn't solve problems. So until we get clear about what a BIC that is, and that we have clarity that if we made a deeper investment in a issue, that we could actually solve it by adding more money to that, then I am in full support of thinking through when to do that and how to do that. But I think that right now, the way that we're distributing resources, and I'm not talking about McKnight, I'm talking about philanthropy at large. And to Sarah's point, we have about $24 billion in assets that are going, that people are holding, and $2 billion that are happening on an annual basis. Until we figure out how to work more collaboratively and strategically so that we're really solving problems, I don't think that extra money is going to solve the problem. Like, we actually need to change our behavior, like changing our behavior, being more intentional, being more collaborative, being more partnership oriented, being bolder in the way that we make the investments that we have. That's going to make a bigger difference than adding more money and distributing it the same way that we're currently distributing, is what I would say. I have not been a part of conversations locally that have been about adding more to the more resources to the pot, but I'm desperate to have those conversations about how what we do currently have, that we use it more intentionally, more strategically, and more powerfully, so that we can then ask the question, how do we add more to what we're doing, because we know it makes the impact that we desire.
I love what you said about being bold and changing behavior, the impact that can have.
Yeah, I mean, well, we all know, like all of us, like this time and this moment, particularly when we think about equity and climate, it's about all of us changing our behavior, right? Like, how are we changing our behavior? How are we stretching ourselves? How are we retooling ourselves to think about our narratives and our experiences and whether or not we're showing up at the most inclusive and in the most equitable way as human beings, and also in the institutions and the businesses that we're running? Are we actually pushing them? Are we stretching ourselves? And it's the same thing when it comes to the climate. Like, they're just unprecedented things that are happening in the world today around renewable energy. You know, and are we actually embracing those things? Are we looking at electric vehicles? Are we thinking about how we conserve energy? Are we thinking about how we use our vote at the federal, state, or local government level to be able to support the things that we know are going to be good, not only for our earth, but also for our people? Those are the kind of things I think we're going to all have. We all need to stretch ourselves in this moment, because the moment requires sacrifice from every single one of us.
We're talking with Tanya Allen, the president of the McKnight Foundation. And Tanya, lots of listeners on the line who want to talk to you as well. In St. Michael, Darlene is on the phone. Darlene, thank you for waiting.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. And what a refreshing and encouraging conversation. For the last, well, since 1881, our little farm was homesteaded. For the last 22 years, I've been working with hundreds of Hmong and African, primarily, but from a lot of different countries, families. They grow for their families, their communities, their farmers markets, their church groups, and it's mostly women. I heard the little bit of the conversation earlier about vibrant communities, and we just keep trying to improve the infrastructure we have so we can maintain a small farm in the middle of a rapidly developing area. And we've had to spend a lot of money to protect our land from predatory development. And even though we're in Ag Preserve, which is supposed to protect us from that, and those resources could have went so much further in creating better trails for the ladies to get to their fields, better rainwater harvest system, a little bigger tractor, a little bit bigger disc, so we can get our work done quickly. I don't know of any resources or any programs or anything for people like us. And I wondered if there's people that you could put me in touch with that could help me advocate for the women, so they get a more fair price for their products. So it would be nice if I got paid. The entire farm depends completely on the rent. And when the pandemic hit, we had virtually no renters, and we've had some serious flood years. So a stable base income to operate a small farm that benefits a huge segment of the community, I would think that would be a viable asset and a place that a community would cherish.
All right, Darlene, there in St. Michael, Minnesota. And Tanya, farmers, small farmers, are they on McKnight Foundation's radar?
Yes. Well, thank you, Darlene, for the work that you're doing. And yes, farmers are definitely on our radar. So, and I'll just tell you, in our climate work, we used to focus solely on the energy system and creating reform there. And more recently, we have expanded that portfolio because we know that there are other things that we need to do that are big carbon emitters that we have to figure out how to address. And for example, working lands is one of them. So farmers, in the way that Darlene talked about that, and to do agroecological way is really important to the McKnight Foundation. We have been working with farmers all across the Andes and Africa to be able to support the work that they've done there. And we want to figure out how do we create policy in this state that actually supports the work that Darlene is talking about so that she doesn't have to be fighting to preserve her land, where she should be focusing her energy on helping those women, as she talked about. Mm-hmm. And so that's a priority for us, is to figure out how do we not just solve this problem for Darlene, but how do we solve this problem for all of the farmers, small landhold farmers throughout the state, because they are so important for our economy, for our food systems, and also for our climate. So, yes, it's definitely on our radar. And if Darlene can just, send information to the McKnight's website, I think we have an info email. I'll try and make sure that we can get her connected.
Let's talk to Teresa, who's calling in from Hibbing, Minnesota. Good morning to you, Teresa. How are you?
Thank you for taking my call. Yeah, I'm up on the Iron Range, and I have a challenge up here. I'm a breast cancer survivor and a cancer patient advocate, and I've done a lot of work with clean water organizations and a lot of research in that area. And I advocate a lot for green infrastructure and green manufacturing and different industries we can bring up here. But I get a lot of pushback from local community members and politicians around here who equate that with job losses. And so I really find it is very hard to connect to people and make them understand that, it doesn't matter how many jobs you have if you can't, if you're too sick to go to work. So I'm just wondering if you have any programs or education. I'm kind of even at a loss as to how to connect the community, because I really would like to build this community instead of have it be so divided.
So creating connections, collaborating, Tanya, as you have spoken of.
Yeah, and it's really about bridging, right? We need to help people see, walk the bridge from the past to the future. And what I think Teresa so smartly articulated was that our economy is changing. So is our world. But in order to preserve our world, we're going to have to change our economy. And lots of people are very afraid of that. They believe that it means that they're going to lose jobs. And I do think that there will be some jobs that will disappear, but they will be replaced with new jobs that are going to be focused on energy conservation. Like, we can look at the dramatic shift that's happened from coal to wind to solar energy in our electricity system. That has created more jobs, not fewer jobs. But the thing is that we shouldn't just tell people that they have to live with that transition. We got to help them move through that transition and make sure that the new jobs that are new and focused on clean energy are actually located in the places where people have been working with traditional forms of energy. We have to make sure that we're not telling them that they're wrong for what they have done in the past, because we did what we knew best then. Today we know better and we can do better. And part of what I love about Teresa's question is basically she's saying, I'm trying to help them understand what the future looks like and what it could come, that this is not about harming us. This is about bettering us. And so we have to get narratives right? And we have to figure out how do we deploy strategies that are going to support people so that they don't feel like they're being attacked, and they actually understand that what we're trying to do is to invest in them and invest in our future, and that future can be vibrant for them too, even if they worked in an industry that may have a shorter life period or we need to sunset because it just isn't good for the collective. And so I would just say to Teresa that there are lots of organizations throughout our state that are working on these issues and who are trying to support leaders and advocates like her to be even more effective, stronger in communicating and getting people to move and shift the way they behave and to shift the practices and the policies that are driving their behaviors. And again, we'd love to get her connected to those advocates, because I feel like she, combined with them, just will be a powerful force of helping us realize what the future can be, and doing that in a way that brings everybody along instead of being divisive and building walls that says that some people are right and some people are wrong. We can all do well together.
Tanya, I didn't get a chance to ask you much about Detroit. You grew up in Detroit. It's also where you most recently moved here from. But I just want to know, did your experiences growing up in Detroit, how have they contributed to your choice of profession, your choice to work in philanthropy?
Yeah, what a great question. Yes. So I did grow up in Detroit, and just kind of speaking to Teresa's question about like people who were afraid of losing jobs, my mother lost her job as a young woman because she was in the manufacturing industry, and the manufacturing industry was shrinking in Detroit. And we all know that story, so I don't need to talk about it. But because she lost her job, it was really difficult for her to actually make a transition to a new sector. And during that time period when she did, we moved a lot. You know, I often say I went to 9 different schools between kindergarten and 12th grade. And I went to the same high school for 4 years. So it tells you the level of kind of like movement and instability that we had in our household. But that struggle, I think, makes me even more passionate about supporting people who are currently struggling today and people who are making the shift from one industry to another as our economy changes. It also gives me like a curiosity and a passion for people. Like, I had to move a lot. I had to learn people really quickly, understand what they were interested in, to be able to support them, and to be able to fit in. And that change actually drives me to feel and understand, like, change can happen. Like, we can navigate change, and we can do it really well as a society if we have the right supports, because my mother, regardless of what was happening economically, she always provided that support. And then the last thing I would just share about that experience in Detroit and growing up is that I saw our city and our state really go backwards over the time that I grew up. Like, I can literally see physically how the space changed and how people neglected and left, abandoned communities and properties. And I think that we could also, that's a fate that could happen for lots of people.
Things can change. Yeah. And Tanya, I'm sorry to interrupt you. The music is on, which means we're out of time. But I just want to.
Sorry, Angela.
No,
thank you.
It's okay. Thank you for spending the hour with us here at NPR and taking phone calls from our listeners. Tanya Allen, the president of the McKnight Foundation, and now a Minnesotan. Glad to have you here with us, Tanya. Today's conversation was produced by Susan Davis. Be safe, everyone. We'll talk again tomorrow at 9. Thanks for listening to a recording of my live radio show on NPR News. A reminder, if you want to catch the show in real time, tune in and call in at a new time, 9 a.m. weekdays on NPR News.